Okay, well, in my world, you've just become very famous.
Well, that's wonderful. It was very scary to make this big decision to go after this, and I was afraid of the virus and stuff. I was afraid it was going to really take away my credibility in the psychiatric area, because I was now going to take on whole new people. My audience has increased much more, yes, rather than losing, as I thought I would.
Good.
But I felt I had to do it anyway.
I feel like if every one of us just puts down our pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, you know, we'll start to see a bigger picture, you know, and that's what we have to do.
Well, I have a report coming out today or tomorrow. It's a 40-page report on Anthony Fauci and how he brought about the virus, benefiting from the virus, denying the whole thing and blaming it on humanity.
Fantastic. Okay, so let's start with Fauci.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Soleri Report. It is my absolute pleasure today to welcome a Soleri Report hero. You've been our weekly hero on several occasions, Dr. Bragan, and now the latest wrap-up, you are a pandemic Soleri hero, and it's an absolute thrill. I discovered you, I just have to mention, because Soleri Report subscribers are very familiar, I discovered you watching TrueStream Media's The Minds of Men.
Yeah.
And you did extensive, brilliant interviews. If you haven't watched Dr. Bragan and TrueStream Media's The Minds of Men, it's a must watch. It was documentary of the year on the Soleri Report. And I watched it and I said, not only is this guy brilliant, and not only is this guy fearless, he must be excessively competent because he's still alive. But you have a real career in preventing abuses by the psychiatric profession of...
Bestseller, back away, is called Talking Back to Prozac.
Uh-huh.
And then Toxic Psychiatry.
Right.
My most recent publication is about the failure of the FDA to require controlled clinical trials for... vaccines.
Wonderful.
And what the effect of that is, because a lot of vaccine damage actually occurs in the first few days.
Right.
And it's neurological injury. And because they don't have an honest placebo control.
Right.
People don't see what the damages are. It's right. Like they're comparing, what they do is they compare one poison to another. They compare their own vaccine to an approved vaccine,
right,
instead of to a saline injection,
right,
a neutral. And so when dirt shows up, it's the same dirt as in the, right, quote, control.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just bizarre.
Right.
And the vaccine court, I couldn't believe that when I learned there was no way to sue the companies. You had to sue the government in a prearranged vaccine court where all the advantages were on the side of the government.
Right.
So we decided we were just going to do that. But what really turned the corner for me is what I want to talk a bit about today. Ginger was pursuing a paper that she had heard about on Twitter, which sounded so bizarre she couldn't believe it was true. And finally she got it, printed it out, and brought it to me and said, let's look at this. And I said, that's an actual scientific paper, honey. And I read down it, and yes, it is. It's a collaboration between the United States and China in building SARS coronaviruses that will attack humans. They're SARS. They do that acute respiratory infection. I said, but how is that possible? How could doctors, mostly at North Carolina, but also the FDA was involved. How could they be collaborating with two Chinese from the Wuhan Institute to make a pathogenic coronavirus? And is this the same one we have now? Turned out not to be.
Right.
You know, what in the world's going on here? So I started looking into it, and the funding was coming mainly, and all the pushing for it, from Fauci's Institute. National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases. And then I started just looking at that trail. Mm-hmm. But the first thing we did was I wrote a blog on it, and then we did a video on it, and we put it up. I have a very large YouTube presence. Some of my videos are approaching a million now over mm-hmm. the years, and we do a little radio TV show once a week that gets in the thousands. I started to just outline what in the world this article could be, what kind of damage it was doing, why would the U.S. be collaborating with the Chinese on building essentially biological weapons, because once you've taken a virus as common and as infectious potentially as a coronavirus, and you've made it a pathogen, taken just a normal one out of some poor bat you grabbed out of a cave in right. China,
right?
And you make it a pathogen, the virus a pathogen. I mean, this would be like inviting the Chinese into our atomic bomb facilities and
right.
saying we've found a way of doing this new and better and smaller weapons, and maybe you can sneak them inside us if we have a war, you know. This is such craziness. And we had some connections into Trump's circle, so we sent it to those people. We put it online. Ginger called everybody she knew in the media. And 2 days later, after we did this, Trump was asked by conservative media at one of his press conferences that he heard about this collaboration with China. He said, yes, I just heard about it, and we're going to stop this. So we felt really, really good about this, mm-hmm. but also scared, like, wow, this is a whole new bunch of enemies.
Now, the funding was continuing at that time, even still. So it didn't stop until then, is that correct?
Yes, and it's not necessarily stopped, because Anthony Fauci is a devilish individual, and
right.
And it gets very, very complicated. But let me do two things. First, let me track the relationship between this initial research and the virus.
Okay.
So what happened is that back in 2003-04, that came out of China, and nobody knows exactly, 2003 really, exactly the origin, natural, lab, nobody knows, but there was a SARS virus.
Right.
Not necessarily a coronavirus. It didn't know until later, a little later. It was a coronavirus. And it killed about 8,000 people around the world. China had a number of deaths, and it was 10% lethal. So it was less infectious, but much more lethal than the current coronavirus. And so they were able to stamp it out, who in the world are organized, and they were able to stamp it out. Because you could identify the sick people, you could isolate them. And you didn't get these terrible hot spots, because it wasn't as infectious as this virus. Then in 2004, and this is something very few people realize, by then China is now on its own experimenting in labs with this as yet unidentified SARS virus. They have isolated it. And they have two contaminations just in 1994. Researchers got the virus in the lab, not wanting to, mm-hmm. left, went home, got sick. One took a big train ride to another province, and they caused the two mini epidemics.
Right. In China.
Right. And it never got out of China. It was covered in the Chinese news. I found it first by going on alternatives to the usual Google, and found a Chinese daily, and then I snooped back into Who, and it was in Who too, Who had a little
right.
description of it. But I've yet to find hardly anybody in the field who's been in there for 20 years, and I've been doing this for, well, since the outbreak, who knew that. I mean, that's how much this stuff is just removed. That
right.
This is not the first time that China's leaked a SARS virus. You think Fauci would want to tell us, hey, guys, you know, we've had these other problems with China leaking, instead of, no, China couldn't leak a virus. So along the way, the US and China begin to work together, and Fauci begins to fund this research. It's called gain of function. What a euphemism. It's changing an ordinary virus into a pathogen.
Right.
Well, President Obama learns about what's going on to some extent, because some scientists were saying, not why are we collaborating with China? All the scientists wanted to collaborate with China. It's sort of like the guys in the NBA. They got a big I want big franchises over in China.
Right.
We support China. It's globalism in part. And I'd be interested in your comments on that, because I think you probably know a lot more about, I'm sure you know a lot more about globalism than I do. And Obama put it on his own stationery. It was 2014, as I recall. And I have a paper coming out on all of this in the next day or two.
I can't wait.
So Obama on White House stationery calls for a moratorium on all of this gain of function, this making viruses more deadly. And there's a hue and cry against it, but there's also many scientists who maybe are not making a living off of this who thought that it was good to put this on. Well, there's a list of research that's made up of the gain of function stuff, and left out of it is the main gain of function research. Obama doesn't know about it. Guess who does know about it? Because he's funding it.
Right.
Fauci.
Right.
And it's research by a man named Manakari out of North Carolina. And he's working with two Wuhan scientists who turn out to be two of the most important there are, no surprise. One of them is a man named G-E, and the other is a lady who becomes the Bat Lady and is written up and praised in Science and in other resources, because everybody in science, New England Journal of Medicine, doesn't matter who it is, JAMA, the British journals, they all love the Chinese. The Chinese are, you know, they work with our drug companies. We farm out our research to them because it can be done cheaply with very little decent supervision in China and so on. There's huge, giant collaborations going on with China.
I don't know if you know this. Our sort of run-of-the-mill pharmaceutical supply is very, very dependent on ingredients from China.
Yeah.
It's deeply dependent.
Yeah, that came out early. And that was one of the things that made me think, well, I know about this stuff. You know, I can learn what I need to know. That's right. We totally dependent. We just outsourced everything.
Right.
So what does this outsourcing? So what does Fauci do when it's really clear that the one thing he must, he just has to cut back on it at least. He outsources direct support for the Wuhan Institute. Fauci outsources it through an organization called Echo Health Alliance, which is this international, powerful, scientific, industrial group. He literally. So here we are. Obama has been on station there, White House station, says, stop doing this research, not about China, but about doing viral, making viruses damaging.
Right.
And Fauci is now outsourcing it directly, direct grants of the Wuhan Institute. So making believe that therefore these new funds aren't going to the U.S., I guess.
Right.
Because really was that letter to cancel it if it went outside the U.S.?
I don't know if you know this, but Operation Warp Speed has done something similar by sending about $6 billion of the $10 billion out through a CIA contractor.
No.
So the pharmaceutical companies aren't coming directly to the government. They're going to the CIA contractor, and it enables you to keep make things much more flexible and keep a lot more secret. It's a standard. I know an awful lot about government contracting. It's a standard tactic.
I want to interview you about a lot of different things on my my radio TV show, and I mean, you're just going to have such international knowledge. So now Fauci is just ignoring in the U.S. what Obama has asked for, and he's still he's making believe that that this particular thing doesn't even exist, because when there's a newspaper report on Obama's moves and so on, it's nothing about the main funding of this dreadful research of creating deadly coronaviruses. So then President Trump comes in. And all this is pretty new to me, by the way. It's my first interview about it. It's just putting it all together, so I may stumble now and again. So then, in December of Trump's first year, Fauci simply cancels Obama's moratorium through NIH. NIH and Fauci together, they cancel it, and they start openly funding.
Oh, my God.
And as far as I can tell, President Trump was not involved. So we have the president putting a moratorium on, new president comes in, and Fauci cancels it.
Right.
I mean, after all, we know now what he thinks of himself. He's far superior to Trump in all things. I mean, science first. This is science. Science first. It's not politics, it's science.
This is this kind of science.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, God. So what happens is the relationship between the U.S. and China, and the two most powerful Chinese researchers, is very intimate. Right. They not only publish a paper in 2015 describing what they're doing, they then publish a follow-up paper without the Chinese on it, but with a thank you acknowledgement for the Chinese sending critical materials to the U.S. in this exchange they're doing. So it's just unbelievable. Then out comes the virus, almost obviously leaked from the Wuhan Institute. Some people think purposely, and there is a political argument being made you could make. And we have no evidence for this, but people say, why would the Chinese leak a virus in their own country? Well, they knew from both the 2015 paper research and their own research that this virus mainly attacked old people and sick people. Because in the 2015 research on the coronavirus, in the publication, it says, it's an odd thing that the old mice are dying, not the young ones.
Right.
And mice who are impaired are dying. I mean, this is amazing. This is all written out.
So I will just mention, if you watch the financial patterns, and you'll see it when you read State of Our Currency, it argues that it was something that the people who run the dollar syndicate, the central banks, bankers wanted.
In
other words, this worked tremendously to the advantage of the central bankers who just approved a global reset.
Well, it scares me to even talk this way, but
right.
If you look at what China's main economic problem is, it's that with this one-child program and then later the two-child right. program, they have no way to support old people.
I did a study on pension funds 2 years ago, 3 years ago. The United States has $25 billion in pension fund monies to support the baby boomer generation. China has $1 billion.
Yeah, that's very important information.
Right.
I'm glad to weave that in. Because
they have absolutely no social safety net, and they're depending on the younger generation to take care of their elders. Right.
Exactly. It's interesting. We're getting our data from so many different places. Some of my data is directly from Chinese people, because we
right.
have so many here at Cornell.
Right.
And they're often very lovely human beings. And
right.
And I learned from them things like there's a saying in China, you're born alone and you die alone.
Right.
Because there's no social security in China. You assume the communist regime, the first thing they have is social security.
Right. And of course, the biggest political problem they have is how do we keep people generating income and fed, and automation is coming. Mm-hmm. So they have serious challenges ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's very clear. So at any rate, there could be a justification for China doing what they were doing, figuring it will almost help them while it will shut down the rest of the world. Now, at that point, Fauci, who is a great supporter of Tedros, and I want folks to think about this. This guy Tedros is a monster.
Right.
I mean, just Google him. But I've got some stuff in my report, but not a lot. Because you Google Tedros, you find out he was covering up epidemics in his own country. He's an extremely corrupt guy. The U.S. didn't want him appointed. And he's a really collaborator with China.
Right.
So when it first, when this thing first comes out, Fauci and Tedros cover up for China.
Right.
And at one point, it was very telling when Fauci is at a press conference undermining Trump, literally in front of the nation. He's saying Tedros is a good man, great man. And Trump is saying, you know, we really want to get into this, but, you know, I don't think so. And the world is thinking, oh, well, Tedros must be a good man because Fauci is an angel. We know that. So Trump must be a bad man. And Fauci actually says, in fact, I just got off the phone with him 2 hours ago.
Right.
I mean, that's how close these right. people are.
Right.
And how treasonous this thing begins to look. I don't know if it's technically treason. We're not at war with China, but this is how it looks. It's just so terrible looking and is so terrible. So what Fauci does is he discourages putting a shutdown on flights out of China. That enables the Chinese to immediately, and of course, neither Fauci nor Tedros announced to the world that they that China is has got a terrible problem with a very infectious disease and it's shutting things down like crazy.
So let me just stop you and ask one question, because there's been a big debate about whether or not the coronavirus has been isolated and SARS-CoV-2 has been proved to exist as a virus as opposed to just a pathogen. Is that true?
Well, my impression from talking, and I probably shouldn't name their names because I couldn't be mistaken, I presume, but I'm talking with some of the most, what you'd call radical virologists and radical mm-hmm. epidemiologists, you know, the people like us, the people who are actually honest, rather conservative,
right?
Don't want to do a lot of harm to the world, don't want to run the world personally. And this virus exists.
Right.
Apparently. And the clinical picture exists too. But it just is not anywhere near as lethal as anybody says. It's right. Practically harmless in children, and there's hardly any demonstrated deaths among children. And even at its worst, if you even using stats that we can't trust from the CDC, if you're an older, compromised person, 75, your death rate, you're already at the edge of the longevity curve, your death rate might be 5%. So my death rate at 84 might be 5% on this. I don't want right. to shut down all the human beings in the world because of that risk. Right. I've got that kind of risk probably from the flu and a lot of other things.
Right.
So they, by delaying the recognition to the world of how bad this is, people don't get ready for it. And thank God Trump doesn't listen to Fauci, and this is well documented. Fauci didn't want Trump to shut down the flights in from China. But China manages to get out thousands of flights around the world, including from Wuhan, at a time when they have shut down their internal flights.
Mm-hmm.
And I document that. Some virologists didn't know this,
right.
epidemiologists. They pretty much shut down. I give the exact data between, say, Beijing. Beijing was down to 5% of air traffic.
Right. Well, I know personal contacts who said China shut down in November.
So, wow.
Right. Yeah. So they were experiencing sickness in September and they shut down in November. And we literally didn't hear about it until 2020.
Well, when you get my report, and I'm very proud that you say you'll read it, I would like you to give me any corrective feedback and additional feedback you can. We can always put out a, an updated. We may have to do this with our big reports and,
My November information is just from a personal contact. It's okay. Just anecdotal. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think there may be some traffic from satellite photos, traffic right. photos showing slowdowns around the Wuhan Institute.
Right, right.
Well, continuing on the story, now I'm unraveling this from memory and I'm at 84. I think I'm doing pretty good, but this
You're doing
is
great.
Am I doing all right? Because this is new information for me and I'm organizing it without notes because I don't want to keep looking at my paper.
Right.
So the next important thing that happens is that two people named XIAO, they publish a paper in February out of China. And this paper has now been removed from where it was put up on the web. And the lead author has apologized because it wasn't an absolutely proven what he wrote. And you can't find the paper, but you can find it through my paper. I got it.
Right.
And what they wrote was amazing. First, also amazing about them, and even in some of the people who are writing somewhat favorable about them, they don't tell who these people are. Well, the first author is a Chinese man. He got his PhD at Northwestern, one of the better universities in the United States. And after he got his PhD, he did 2 years of research fellowship at Harvard Medical School in Boston,
right.
A place I passed through as a resident in psychiatry, not as a medical student. I was there for a year. And then he went to, he was for a time in Wuhan, and then he moved on, and he is a professor at one of the top universities in the world in South China, University of South China Technology or Tech or something. The second author is a professor, both again a researcher, who lives in Wuhan. So these are really spot-on people. These are not just, right. Chinese researcher, which is what the right. sense you get. And they found, first of all, by interviewing dozens and dozens of people, they cite the number, that there were no bats in the Wuhan market. They don't sell them anywhere in China for food. Not in China, in the Wuhan area for food. They would have had to fly 900 kilometers from the caves to get there. That the virus looks like a virus that has been, man-made, which another Chinese will go into much more detail about later. And furthermore, that Professor Ji at the Wuhan Institute has long been working on developing, on taking coronaviruses, and so is the bat lady, out of bats and putting them in a way they can be manipulated into the Wuhan labs. And that involves tinkering. You just don't take out the virus and you keep it in the bat and the bat hangs there. And no. You take the virus out of the bat, you put it into various stews to keep it alive, and you are beginning, for example, the coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2 is apparently in a stew with HIV material in it because that's in there.
No, I have to stop you for a second. One of the funniest series of interviews and discussions I've ever read on, I'll call it biohazard fraud or healthcare fraud, was a PR executive explaining to John Rappaport how they used the green African monkey on HIV and why getting bizarre exotic animals from foreign places helps you engineer fear and get people to stop asking questions. He's got a whole series on it. It's amazing.
This is John's work?
Yeah, no, it's fabulous. And good. The first time I ever heard I'll put that on my list to send you one of the great quotes that I always use on the green African monkey. But as soon as I heard the bat from the Wuhan market, I said, oh, it's the Chinese green African monkey. Here we go.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It
that's
is.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
So these two researchers, you know, spelled X-I-A-O, these two researchers then went on to say that, but we have all this material we know that Dr. G is working with. And of course, there have been so many leaks from these facilities in the past.
Right.
And by the way, another Fauci thing. Fauci approved the Wuhan Institute as a level 4 top biocontainment facility in order to outsource the research to get around Obama. And he knew that that this place was unsafe. That's
right.
Another thing he did. I mean, he's really responsible for a lot of what we're going
through. Well, it sounds to me like he wanted a place that it would be easy to leak out of.
My mind just says, well, I don't, okay.
Peter, I was trying to.
I don't know what to say when it gets so horrible.
I was trained as an investment banker. I spent 11 years on Wall Street and then several years in Washington. So I have no problem saying that. Oh, that's perfectly logical.
Oh, God. And you know what? It never occurred to me. How can I still be naive? I mean, I'm the guy who looked inside Eli Lilly and saw all the stuff they were doing. It's hard. It's hard not to be.
It's hard if you have empathy to understand how people who don't have empathy can organize and cooperate to achieve great things.
Yeah, you know, and as a therapist, I'm a therapist. I still see patients and love it. And when you see patients, you can have empathy for all of them, and they all have empathy for other people, or they wouldn't be getting help, seeking it.
Right, right.
These, you know, Fauci doesn't go to counseling to find out why he's so violent.
Right.
So I don't get to see them. I only get to see them somewhat through my legal work, you know, with
right.
the, but, here, but not generally
the
even there.
You know, not to oversimplify, but what I've said for many years is crime that pays is crime that stays. And the reality is the general population has had an almost Stockholm syndrome relationship where we continue to tolerate, even admire and support the people who centralize political and economic power using these means. I mean, they use these tactics because it's worked. It continues to work, and it's going to work until it stops working. We have to engineer the conditions that stop it from working.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you on that. And I would like to, again, just spend some time privately or in front of the cameras, which seems to be the only place I have intense conversations other than with my wife.
So let me ask you a couple questions more about this Fauci paper. And I can't wait till it comes out because...
Yeah, and I'm only giving you a taste, folks. There's so much more in it.
The information, there's a lot of information around what I would call Fauci shenanigans, but I haven't seen it all brought together in one place. And I think the more we can do that, the more helpful it is because it helps you understand. So I have several questions I want to bring up. I think one of the very important facts in and around what Fauci has been up to is the December meeting in Switzerland, in which we saw the gathered sort of vaccine programs globally admit that they had no tests to prove that vaccines were safe or effective, individually, let alone all collectively in one little body. Do you think mm-hmm. that meeting had an impact on what's happening now?
Why don't you tell me? You've done deeper thinking about this than I have. What? Tell me what the heck is going on? What do you think is going on?
I think the global vaccine programs were dead in the water as a result of that. I think they were truly threatened. And the question was, if you consider it extremely important to inject a series of things you want injected into people's bodies through vaccines and those programs, what they talked about at that meeting was that literally 30% of the healthcare providers and parents were seriously questioning both safety and efficacy and wanted science, and they wanted to see science. And everybody basically admitted in front of the cameras, which surprised me, that they had no science to support it. One fellow from Nigeria was very eloquent and said, you know, I don't just want science on the individual vaccines. I want science that says putting them all together in a cocktail in one little body.
They can't possibly have science on that.
Right. They
have nothing.
Well, it was clear from the conversation in their faces that that was the fact, that there was no, you know, the whole thing was really a bluff.
And then they lie. They come out. I read one statement by a proponent of vaccines that the total load given to an infant and child was not even 1% of what a child could handle.
Oh, my God.
I mean, how do they know that? How do they know that two of them in combination can be handled when they haven't done any research on it?
Right.
But let me just say, I did not know that they felt under such threat. So this is new information for me.
Well, that's my belief from watching it.
Yeah, makes sense.
They
makes
had
sense.
Yeah, they had,
they would, yeah, they would want to head it off way in advance.
Right. Right, because this was, I mean, basically what they were being told, you've got to produce science that says they're safe and effective individually and collectively to get over this marketing challenge. We have a serious marketing challenges, and here's what we need to get over it. And it was interesting, there was an anthropologist from London, her name is Dr. Heidi Larson, who presented this material about this is what we need to get over the growing obstacles and objections to, I don't even call them vaccines because I don't think they're medicine. And I sent her an email after watching her, and I said, Dr. Larson, could you please disclose the vaccine schedule you've used on your children and the vaccine schedule that the people at the Gates Foundation, both management and board, have used on their children? Of course, I got no reply.
Yeah, you're wonderful.
No, I believe in intimate responsibility. So here's another question I have, and this comes back to sort of investment banking view of the world. Charles Lieber was a professor in the chemistry department at Harvard who was arrested right as the brouhaha started, because he had entered into a contract with the Wuhan laboratory that looked to me somewhat contiguous to Fauci's activities in Wuhan. This is the kind of action, he was arrested by the Department of Justice. This is kind of action that's taken to make sure somebody shuts up. Mm-hmm. And if you look at his website for his Lieber Research Group, which is a side business that he operates, he appears to be one of the leading experts in the world on brain-machine interface that can be injected.
Wow.
So,
does he have ties to Elon Musk? Interesting.
I remember one writer referring to possible ties, but I really don't know. My number one big question is, what was Lieber doing in Wuhan, really? Why do they want to shut him up? What's his relationship with Fauci's funding? And was part of what happened in Wuhan a prototype gone wrong? Including with injectable brain-machine interface. Because some of the patterns reported, not that it's reliable reporting, clearly look like neurological damage. I don't know, but I was curious if you had ever looked into...
No, this is new for me. This is just fascinating.
Right. Well, I have two researchers who've been helping us and trying to identify all the different technologies used with injections or injection related to try and institute what Moderna calls the software of life. In other words, putting an operating system in a human's body. And we finally gave up trying to track it all and created a database called Dr. Gates's Creepy Technology, just because there's so many different things being tried and prototyped.
You know,
it's impossible. You know, it's impossible to understand where they're going with all this, because you're in a very creative period where they're just trying everything.
Yeah, that's what I get from the latest stuff out of Elon Musk, that they're just, he is, one of my blogs discusses this, because there's a new thing that has been already put on the market, but then I've heard nothing about it. But I mounted a significant attack when I found out that they were putting out a cap that would put two electrodes on the head of a child.
Right. Oh, your interviews and publications on that was fantastic.
I was publishing
them and sending them everywhere.
Oh, God bless you. I didn't even know you were out there.
Well, but here's the thing. You managed, even though you are a very, you know, educated and experienced expert, you managed to communicate the most incredible outrage with your coverage of that. So how you got all the technical expertise combined with the outrage was very impressive. But and you couldn't believe that the FDA would approve something this psychotic. I mean, it was words or demonic. I can't find words.
Well, here is where I have a lot of evidence. It's not a conspiracy theory. The part of the FDA that does the instruments and devices, I think it's called the devices division, it really supports things that go along with DARPA and
right.
go along with the needs of CIA or
right.
military. And they have just refused to be honest about electroshock treatment. And we can do maybe right. another show on that. I don't want to get into that right now. And when I conducted an international campaign in the 1970s that stopped the return of lobotomy and psychosurgery, pretty much, there was a big resurgence going on, that's psychiatric brain mutilation. And at no point did the FDA even try to, that division, make believe that they wanted to have research on it.
Right.
They just wanted it to go on, period.
Right.
And that was stuff that turned it out was being funded by the Law Enforcement Administration of Justice, which is was at that point very similar to DARPA. I actually found all that out and got all these things
right.
canceled.
I know, it's fantastic. That's one of the reasons I said it's amazing you're alive. We didn't explain what they have just approved for children, so why don't you just mention that?
Well, it's basically... it's almost an unknown, really, because you're putting electrodes on the front of the forehead and you're stimulating the child with what are actually low levels of voltage and low levels of
right.
current all night long.
And they're
Where
sleeping
is that
with,
current
they're
going?
Sleeping with it. So you're basically basically injecting them with electrostimulation all night long while they're sleeping.
When their right. brain is supposed to be recovering from
right.
the daily activities and reorganizing, you are putting in what one of my experts that I was talked with about this said is like just a constant little hammer going up the
right.
up the nerves. It's totally non-biologic. Some of the nerves that are coming down and being stimulated at the skin level, because it's probably not going through the skull, they're being stimulated at the skin level, and they're nerves that come down.
Right.
They're motor nerves that make you grimace, let's say, and they're being stimulated back up backwards, back up into the frontal lobes and higher centers of the brain. So it's bizarre, unpredictable message messing up going on. No way to predict its outcome. But in general, all overstimulation of the brain leads to apathy.
Right.
And indifference. The brain eventually goes, bleh. This
right.
stops. And so I'm sure some of these children may have gotten apathetic. But
right.
they had, like, I don't remember anymore, but a couple of dozen children were the only, that's all they had in their research project, getting the stimulation. They didn't even have to have two studies at one little, I mean, it was so clear that there
was
some
barbaric.
Motives.
Right. It was
barbaric and clear that the device division had something they wanted to do. And it dovetails with Elon Musk and his stuff. And Musk says was saying he was sure he could get it in a speech that I criticized with material I got from Aaron and Melissa Dykes, our mutual friends who did that great movie, The Minds of Men.
So I just now want to turn to a very exciting, I would describe it as a new book that everyone here can go to your website and download. You know, it's better reading than watching an action movie because you just have so many, what? And that is the new filing you just did for Tom Rentz at Ohio Stands Up. We just had a wonderful interview that John Rappaport did of Tom on the Salieri Report. It's up on the website. And so I've read his filing. And when I went to your website, I discovered that you've prepared this. I was so excited. I couldn't stop. You know, I was like cheering and jumping up and down, and there was no one to celebrate with. So, but now I can. This is a remarkable, this is like the War and Peace of the COVID-19.
That's not even the one I just put out. This is right. The original right. Big
so,
one.
So I'm looking to read Fauci, but let's go back and talk about, it's called COVID-19 Public Health Totalitarianism, perfect name, Untoward Effects on Individuals, Institutions, and Society by Peter Bregan, MD. This is a tour de force. This is everybody's got to go to your website and read this. I just said, this guy has a very big brain.
The attorney, Jeff Rentz, who got to me through Pam Popper. I don't know if you know Pam.
Yes, tremendous. I'm a member of her website, I'm a member of your website, too. So
it's a whole new world for me. But Pam introduced this attorney to me. Uh-huh. And he, you know, I think he thought I was going to give him a psychoanalytic discussion of what happens to people who are caught up in rooms or something and, right. and so on. And I talk some about that, but I've been thinking about the world and freedom and totalitarianism. Right. I've written about it, which most people don't know. And it was like I took together 84 years since birth and just wrapped it around COVID. I couldn't believe it. Right. And it was such a pressure. He needed it on a certain date. And I did it in 1 month.
I have to tell you, if I was a judge, this document would be compelling. Now, I think his filing is very compelling, but I think this document is unbelievably compelling.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, this is really, I don't hear this a lot, and this is just wonderful to hear because, you know, I didn't get paid for that. I didn't ask for any payment to do this, to right. do all this work. And just hearing that your praise of it just touches me deeply. I'm going to share it with Ginger. It's a joint effort,
right.
but Ginger and I felt since it was a medical report, and I wrote it all, that right. I shouldn't put our joint names on it, but I do credit her, right. you know, the work.
Well, it has the balance that you always get when you have a man and a woman working together on something. So I always, in investment advisory, one of the things I discovered was you can trick a man with financial fraud, you can trick a woman, but it's almost impossible to trick a man and a woman working together.
Oh, that's amazing.
And one of the things I would love to do is do a show with you on the economics of men and women, because I've studied this a lot in business, mm-hmm. and it's quite phenomenal how the number one effort for political control that depends on divide and conquer is to turn men and women against each other, because their productivity is so much greater in any endeavor that I've ever tried to estimate or map out if they work together. And you can see yeah. that in this filing that there's, you know, you sort of cover the living ecosystem. So it doesn't surprise me that Ginger was involved.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, it's got 500 citations in it with a URL. I mean, you know, a link for every single one, except maybe a book.
Right.
For every single one has a.
So I have to tell you, because, you know, we've read, we just finished doing a wrap up on the best of the pandemic, of which this will be added. And so, you know, we've read and covered an awful lot because I've been trying to integrate what's happening in health with what's happening in the economy and the global financial reset. And so I've read an awful lot, but this had sections that were whole new information, but I just have to tell you my favorite. There is one which is my hands down favorite. Can you guess what it is?
Fear?
No, because I've done a lot of...
Oh, dealing. Fear, okay.
You know, I've dealt with a ton of, you know, they tried...
Ginger played a big role in that section.
The fear section is fantastic. The fear section, because fear is such a manipulative tool, and I want to get back to that. But you have a section called the most vulnerable groups under COVID-19.
Yeah.
And you walk through all the different groups that have been particularly harmed. And you do it in a way that really helps us understand, you know, because everybody's different and there are many unique fact patterns, but you really see how cleverly this has really hurt a whole world of people in a way that you don't understand normally. You know, we all understand my fact pattern and the fact pattern of the people we know, but we don't understand the fact patterns. And then you proceed to tell some stories, for example, about the mother with the young autistic son. Oh my God, you really see the damage. I was asked the other day.
That I think is from Pam's part.
Yes.
I took stuff right from Pam with her permission.
Right.
But that was the first thing I wrote. I sat down, I said, Ginge, I don't know if I can do this. You know, my God, we got a month and I get a little chill right now just thinking about it. And I sat down and I just started doing that, writing it. And I think it's the therapist in me, you know, you know, if you do my personality profile with slightly different answering of questions, like on Myers-Briggs or something, my personality profile, I am.
Let me guess. You are an E, X. You're balanced between S and N.
No, I'm an N.
You're an N. Okay,
no, so Ginger's you see the big Ginger picture. Brings in both N and S. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just an N.
So you're an N. Okay, that makes sense.
E or N.
You're ENF. You're balanced on the P and the J.
Well, the interesting thing is I'm actually all of that. That's the thing.
Right.
So if I answer questions thinking of myself as a therapist,
right,
then I'm an ENF for feeling.
Right.
And probably a little P instead of J because it's all open-ended. But then if I think about my work in public, I'm what he calls a field marshal.
You're a TJ, right?
Yeah,
right.
Definitely. I mean, I'm an ENTJ or an INTJ. So there is a lot. I'm an unusual person in coming in from all of those areas.
Right.
And it's interesting. I think it's that balance rather than any high intelligence. So that really brings into this work and makes it.
Oh, I think the thing that marks you more than anything is you have an insatiable urge to understand what in the world is going on and heal it.
Yes, that's right. Or knock it down.
Well, right.
Wow.
You are
a good hit.
You're an unstoppable force. So let's just jump back before we close and talk about the fear, because I think the fear section is part of the tour de force for sure. And you know, and they've used it very cleverly.
Yeah. Well, Let me just summarize it. Ginger came to me and said, "You've got to deal with this." I said, "What, honey? I'm really busy. I got another week or something." She said, "Do you know they've been studying fear for decades? Do you know there's a whole thing called fear appeal, which is such a weird phrase?"
Right.
Fear appeal research. That is how you appeal to people by scaring them. What a weird idea. And she said, "Read this, look at this, look at this." And I'm thinking, piling up. And she's just a fabulous researcher. And so I started to read. And I was, again, like, I don't know, I keep this naivete, like, how the hell can they be publishing this stuff?
Right.
Nobody is exposing this. Nobody's writing condemnation of this. How do you scare people into taking vaccines? How do you scare people into wearing masks? How much scare is good? At what point is the scare too much? And the first paper she gave me was, I thought it was going to be a little critical. I read like it was a little critical, and they were critical. They said, once you've scared the person, you got to do two other things. That's because at first I thought they were saying scaring wasn't quite
right.
Good, but no, it wasn't good enough. Once you scare people, said this amazing paper, you have to make it personal.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand this isn't just about society. Got to make it personal. Then you got to give them actions that they have to do, that they like that.
Right.
Give them something to do about it, like wear a mask.
Right.
That's where this power of wearing.
I'm taking action.
That's right.
Right.
And so this is systematic. And then if you go into the literature of the public health people, they assume that they know what's best for society, at least when there's an epidemic. But you know, they have to believe they know what's best anyway, because it's all one thing. And nowhere in what they discuss in terms of what society needs do they ever discuss relationship or love on the one hand, or freedom and liberty on the other. Right. And to me, what life is about is a good measure of liberty and love, you know? Good right. measure. Lots right. of liberty, but not in the absence of love, without which liberty is a nasty thing even. Right. You gotta have liberty and love. And our founders knew that.
Right.
You have to have liberty and social relationships. I should end soon, because believe it or not, I'm recording my TV in 45 minutes.
Okay, well.
This has been one of my most fun interviews ever.
Oh, I'm so glad that you've joined me. So I'm going to put links up for your COVID-19 War and Peace tour de force. Fauci is going to be published this weekend.
Yes, I'm hoping to get it up this week. Definitely, okay. Yes.
So we'll,
today's
we'll
Friday. I want to get it up Saturday or Sunday.
Okay. We'll put up a link to your website, but just briefly tell people how they can sign up, how they can access your TV program. How do they plug into everything?
Well, the easiest way to plug into everything is go to Breggin.com, Breggin.com. Just tool down a little past the Coronavirus Resource Center and go to the frequent alerts and sign up. I never say this. I should say this all the time.
Yeah.
Sign up for my frequent alerts. They're free. We put out somewhere between 4 and 6 a month or so. I mean, usually right. more than once a week.
So I'm on your list. They're great. There's always something very informative and interesting. So they're good.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And I just want to say, if you haven't seen True Streams, Minds of Men, you must watch it, and you must see Peter just change your world. You will never again say, why is no one doing anything?
Well, and I'm not in the first, there's 4 parts, basically, the way it's shown. And I think I start showing up in around
second.
End of
I think
part
in the
2.
Second. Yeah, yeah.
And then 3 and 4.
Okay, well, Peter Breggin, thank you.
Thank you
for everything you're doing. And we're in cahoots, so let me know how I can be of service, okay?
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.
Bye now.